The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, friends. This is Larry Wilson for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you articles of interest from Kiplinger Personal Finance. Our first article, Planning to Move? Trim Your Cost. Staying on budget can reduce the stress that comes with relocating. This article by Sandra Block. May marks the beginning of peak moving season. More than 80% of Americans who moved in 2024 said the experience was stressful, and 42% said the process brought them to tears, according to a survey by Anytime Estimate, a website that helps consumers estimate the cost of selling their homes. For some, moving was more stressful than having a baby, getting divorced, or even losing a loved one, the survey found. A major reason for the stress, unanticipated cost. Nearly 80% of those surveyed said that they experienced unexpected expenses when they moved, and 40% said they went over budget. While many people relocate to improve their financial prospects, to get a better job, for example, nearly 40% of those surveyed said that the move worsened their personal finances. The average cost of moving was $2,050 in 2024, according to the survey, while Americans who moved more than 100 miles spent an average of $3,291. Hiring movers added significantly to the cost. Americans who used a moving company spent an average of $2,907 on their move, compared with an average of $1,334 for do-it-yourself movers. If you need to move a long distance, or you have a lot of stuff, you may have no choice but to hire a moving company. But there are steps you can take to keep the cost down. First, make a plan. As soon as you know you're going to move, start comparing prices for the services you'll need, whether it's hired hands, a rental truck, or a moving company. You can get quotes at sites such as moving.com and movinghelp.com. And try to avoid peak moving periods. Moving companies are busiest between May and August and adjust their rates accordingly, according to Atlas Van Lines. You'll save a lot of money if you move during the off-season. You can also save money by scheduling your move for weekdays and the middle of the month, Atlas says. And pack your own stuff. Packing is the most stressful and time-consuming aspect of moving, according to the Anytime Estimate survey. Still, paying movers to do the job will significantly increase the cost of moving. Consider it an opportunity to downsize and sell or donate items you no longer love enough to pack. Our next article is an interview with Kathy Stokes, who is Director of Fraud Prevention for the AARP Fraud Watch Network. This article was written by Emma Patch. Watch out for scams that target older adults. Cryptocurrency cons and impersonation schemes are among the most common. Scams that rob older adults of $100,000 or more have tripled since 2020, according to the Federal Trade Commission. Well, what is driving this trend? The biggest crimes we're seeing are relationship-based investment scams, typically involving cryptocurrency. Scammers contact people on social media or send a message, and they pretend that they sent the message to the wrong person. They use that as an entry point to begin a conversation that eventually becomes a trust relationship. Then the criminal suggests investing in cryptocurrency. Eventually, the victim loses everything. These criminals target older adults because that's where most of the money can be found. These scams rose sharply during the pandemic when a lot of people went online, many for the first time, to do everything from working to shopping, and the criminals followed. The Chinese mafia set up scam centers in vacant casinos, enslaving people through human trafficking and having them text out millions of text messages to lure victims. What other scams commonly affect older adults? We're seeing a lot of complex impersonation schemes. You may get a text that looks like it's from your bank, asking whether you performed a certain transaction. And it's always something scary, say a $1,700 charge. If you click no, you immediately get a phone call from someone who claims that your bank account is being hacked. Then they tell you they're going to get you on the phone with their fraud investigations team and the FBI to protect your assets. Sometimes they'll have you take out your money from your bank account, walk over to a cryptocurrency ATM, and convert it to crypto and send it to the scammer. In other cases, they'll tell you to purchase gold bars with the money, and wait until someone who is impersonating an FBI agent picks you up. We also hear about people who come to nursing homes and offer services such as DNA test kits that they claim are covered by Medicare. In reality, the scammers are looking for information they can use to steal the individual's identities and cause all kinds of havoc. What vulnerabilities do scammers exploit in the aftermath of a natural disaster? Natural disasters are a free-for-all for criminals because they know that many people in a particular geographic area have been affected. Scammers are creating fake charities, impersonating contractors, and listing fake home rentals online to target people who are looking for a place to stay. You should be skeptical of anybody coming to you to offer help following a natural disaster, especially if there's money involved. I know how hard it is not to take the first offer in a situation where you have to rebuild or you have a lot of damage. But it's really important to do some research. Get bids from multiple contractors and don't pay everything up front. When it comes to finding rental properties, use legitimate sites and make sure you're staying within the rental website or app when you make a payment. If you're asked to make a payment outside of the platform, that's a sign of a scam. And lastly, how can people protect themselves and their aging loved ones? We're all susceptible to fraud. It's not only older Americans. At aarp.org/fraudwatchnetwork, you can sign up for biweekly emails or text messages alerts of the latest scams from the AARP Fraud Watch Network. We also have a helpline at 877-908-3360. That number again is 877-908-3360 that people can call if they have questions or have been victimized. And our next article, what to expect in the job market, especially in the most competitive fields. Job seekers will need to strategize to stand out. This article by Kimberly Langford. Lately, the headlines have been filled with news of layoffs, especially for federal workers and tech workers. Depending on your field, however, your job may not be at much risk of hitting the chopping block. And if you're looking for a new role, your prospects may be closely tied to your corner of the market. For some job hunters, finding work can take months. When it comes to unemployment, the figures started this year looked good, with the overall unemployment rate at a low 4% in January. But unemployment data is only part of the story. Although layoffs haven't been widespread across industries, there are fewer job openings, says Harry Holzer, senior fellow in economic studies at the Brookings Institution and an economist at Georgetown University. The economy added 143,000 jobs in January of 2025, compared with an average of 166,000 per month in 2024, and about 216,000 per month in 2023, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. In general, employers, quote, are holding on to their workers and at the same time cautious in their hiring, says Allison Shavasta, economist with the Indeed Hiring Lab. The situation varies by industry, she says. Almost 75% of the new jobs added in 2024 were in three industries: healthcare and social assistance, government, and leisure and hospitality. For federal government jobs, the picture is changing significantly because of the federal hiring freeze that President Trump ordered when he took office and the extensive layoffs among federal government employees that followed. And that may cause a ripple effect that reaches other related businesses and companies that are losing government grants and funding. We're not sure yet how far this is going to go and how big an effect it will have, Holzer says. The big winner has been healthcare. Healthcare employment growth before the pandemic averaged 1.7% or 2% year over year, and last year it was 3.7%, says Julia Pollack, chief economist at ZipRecruiter. While other fields can consolidate and automate functions, in healthcare, that's difficult to do. You need people. In many other areas, people have struggled to find work. Some of the most challenging fields, Pollack says, have been human resources, marketing and communications. Tech hiring is down after an earlier boom. Blue-collar jobs in industries such as transportation and warehousing have not been growing as quickly as they were before the pandemic. Some of these shifts can be especially tough for new graduates, historically the most sensitive group to any change, Holzer says. The 2025 college hiring outlook by the Drexel University Lebow College of Business found that employer optimism had reached its lowest point since 2021, with only 21% of employers rating the job market as excellent or very good. Employers are adopting a more cautious approach driven by economic pressures and budget constraints, the report says. With reduced optimism, employers are likely to prioritize selective hiring, focusing on essential skills and expanding internships and other co-op programs to build a strong talent pipeline. And advice for job seekers: the following steps can help with your job search, and some of the guidance is different than it has been in the past. If you're a college student, start early. An internship in the summer after junior year and a focused career search helped undergraduate students at the University of Wisconsin School of Business find jobs in 2024. 95% of the graduates seeking employment had a job within 6 months of graduation, and 94% said they were satisfied with their job, says Melissa Leffen, executive director of undergraduate career employer and pathway engagement for the business school. More than 60% ended up returning to the employer where they did their internship after their junior year, Leffen says. And use AI to sharpen your resume and cover letter. Even though it's easy to apply to a lot of jobs online, you won't get very far if you send the same resume and cover letter to everyone. Employers are using artificial intelligence filters to search for keywords and skills to decide who makes it to the next level. Look for keywords and skill sets in job listings and explain how they compare to your experience. Include skill development rather than just job responsibilities in your resume. While you shouldn't use AI to write your cover letter and resume, you can use it to refine them by asking a tool such as ChatGPT to suggest improvements, for example, and practice for job interviews. Pollack also recommends signing up for email alerts of job listings and acting quickly when one catches your eye. Many companies look at applications only in the first weeks or so, says Pollack. Don't overlook in-person networking. Join associations, go to conferences in person, and set up brief meetings in person or on the phone with people in fields you're interested in. Even if you graduated college years ago, take advantage of its alumni network and get in touch with former colleagues. In a competitive job market, networking can be critical, Evans says. Even if they don't get you a job, they can give you information that can help with your cover letter and resume. And lastly, consider pivoting to a field in a growing sector. Getting a health-related credential, such as in health tech or nursing, or taking time to get licenses or certifications for skilled trades can create more opportunities, Pollack says. We see tremendous need in the skilled trades. Most employers can find laborers, but they can't find the highly experienced skilled electricians, carpenters, and plumbers. If you want to remain in your sector, find out what certifications or continuing education courses will give you an edge. The lowdown on using HSA funds. Keep records of qualifying expenses and make sure you understand the rules. This article by Ella Vinson. A health savings account is a remarkable tool to help pay for out-of-pocket medical expenses. HSAs offer a triple tax advantage. Contributions are tax deductible, up to $4,300 for self-only coverage and $8,550 for family coverage in 2025, plus an extra $1,000 if you're 55 or older. Growth from the account's investment is tax deferred, and withdrawals are tax free for eligible expenses. You must have a qualifying high deductible health insurance plan to fund an HSA. Reimbursement options. You can use HSA money for out-of-pocket expenses, including insurance deductibles and copayments, as well as items ranging from pain relief medication to bandages to hearing aid batteries. If you make a non-qualified withdrawal, you'll owe income tax on it, plus a 20% penalty if you're younger than 65. After you turn 65, you'll owe income tax, but no penalty. Unlike flexible spending accounts, HSAs don't impose a deadline by which you must use the funds, and you can get reimbursement for qualifying medical expenses at any time. For example, you could claim HSA funds years from now for a medication you buy today as long as you owned the HSA when you made the purchase. The ability to hold on to HSA funds over the long term is valuable. If you can afford to avoid tapping your HSA during your working years, the account may grow significantly from your contributions and investment earnings. HSAs typically allow you to invest in stocks, mutual funds, and other securities. In retirement, you can use HSA money to pay for qualifying medical expenses, including premiums for Medicare Part B and Part D and Medicare Advantage. When you're ready to claim HSA money, you may be able to go to your provider's web portal and transfer funds to your checking or savings account. In addition, some HSA providers allow you to write yourself a check from your account. If your HSA comes with a debit card, you can use it to make eligible purchases directly, for example, at pharmacies or doctor's offices. And depending on your HSA provider, you may be able to withdraw funds from an ATM to reimburse yourself for out-of-pocket medical expenses. Tracking the paperwork. Even if your HSA administrator doesn't require you to submit receipts for reimbursement, it's a good idea to hang on to them, says Michael Eldridge, a product manager for HSA provider Inspiria Financial. You'll need them for your tax records in the event you're audited. If your doctor provided letters of medical necessity for certain purchases, save the letters in case your HSA provider or the IRS requests proof that expenses were eligible, says Itamar Romania, Vice President and General Manager of online retailer HSA Store. By hanging on to payment records, you can keep track of any expenses that you don't claim right away, too. File receipts and explanations of benefits in a safe place at home or save them digitally. HSA's Store's free expense tracker mobile app at hsastore.com lets you store and upload images of receipts. With Track HSA, and that can be found at trackhsa.com, for $1 a month after a 30-day free trial, you can upload receipts and organize expenses by year so that you can easily find them later. And here's an interesting article from Kiplinger Personal Finance, A Guide to Lending Money to Family Members. Put the terms in writing and take steps to avoid tax complications. This article by Ella Vinson. If your adult child or another family member asks you to lend them money, say to pay for a wedding, a down payment on a house, or some other major expense, you may be eager to assist. And with a solid plan in place, an intra-family loan can provide your loved one and you a low-cost way to borrow money and give you the satisfaction of offering a helping hand. But as you decide whether and how to extend a loan, keep in mind that there's a chance you won't get the money back, and if that happens, your relationship with the borrower may suffer. You should never lend more money than you can afford to lose. Settle on the terms. If you decide to go ahead with a loan, putting the repayment guidelines in writing helps assure that the terms are clear and may provide your chances of being repaid. R. Philip Petroski, a certified financial planner and senior partner at Blackhorn Partners in Middleton, Wisconsin, recommends drawing up a promissory note, that's a written loan repayment agreement between a lender and a borrower, ideally with the help of a family law attorney. You may also want to get the document notarized, he says. The agreement should specify the amount of the loan, the repayment schedule, and the amount of interest you'll charge. Online lending marketplace LendingTree has a tool you can use to calculate payments based on the interest rate, repayment period, and size of the loan at LendingTree.com. As you determine the interest rate you'll charge, keep IRS rules in mind. If you lend more than $10,000, you must charge an interest rate equal to or higher than the IRS applicable federal rate, also known as AFR. There are three AFR tiers based on the length of the loan. Short-term, up to 3 years, midterm, 3 to 9 years, and long-term, 10 years or more. AFRs are updated monthly on the IRS website at irs.gov. You must report the interest on your income tax return. If the interest rate on a loan is of more than $10,000 isn't at least as high as the AFR, you may owe tax based on the difference between the AFR and the interest rate you actually charged. If the loan amount is $10,000 or less, you can set a rate, including 0%, without worrying about those tax consequences. In the event that your loved one defaults on the loan, the written agreement you created may protect you. If you can demonstrate that the loan is uncollectible, you may be able to claim a deduction for a non-business bad debt. The bad debt will be treated as a short-term capital loss on your tax returns, says Marianella Collado, a CFP at Tobias Financial Advisors in Plantation, Florida. A short-term capital loss can be used to offset capital gains and up to $3,000 in other income if you have more losses than gains. And lastly, consider a gift instead. To sidestep the complications that can come with offering a loan, you could make the money a gift if you can afford it. However, if you give more than the annual gift tax exemption, which in 2015 is $19,000 per recipient, you're required to file a gift tax return with the IRS, and the amount will count against your lifetime estate tax exemption. If you're married, you and your spouse can give a combined $38,000 per recipient without filing a gift tax return. And as we wrap up our episode today, we'll end with an article, Make the Case for a Credit Limit Increase. A key component of your credit score is your credit utilization rate. That's the percentage of available credit you use on your credit cards, both on individual accounts and in the aggregate across all your cards. Generally, the lower your utilization rate, the better. If you're working to improve your credit score, keeping the rate below 10% is a good idea. To reduce utilization, one strategy is to ask your card issuer for a higher credit limit. If the issuer agrees to it and you avoid increasing the amount you spend on the card, your utilization rate should go down. Your credit score may take a small temporary hit from a hard inquiry on your credit report if the issuer checks your credit in response to your request. But making this move can give your credit score a significant boost in the long run, says Matt Schultz, chief credit analyst at online loan marketplace LendingTree. And we are now out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. Thank you for joining us. And until next time, this is Larry Wilson. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving our community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Money Matters is also available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please give us a call, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.